And Jay Clark is our guest. And I'm Jerry Pippin, and he is the, I guess you're the only person convicted in that whole thing that went did a hard time.
Yeah.
As far as I know. And why do you think they chose you? An easy target, or just to keep you quiet, or what?
No, when I got sentenced, they said that I made the local, state, and federal government look like a fool. Because of the fact that...
Well, maybe they should all go to jail instead of you.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Teach them a lesson.
So I went to Tulsa with the medical examiner. You didn't run off as a fugitive.
No. When I left there, I was not a fugitive.
So... We're talking about William J. Clark, and you were in charge basically for most of 3.5 days, if not all of it, huh?
Yes, that's correct.
Nobody showed up and said, "We're taking over"?
No.
Who are you? Where are your orders?
No, nothing.
Don't you? There's a lot of unanswered questions here, which you wouldn't have the ability to know about either. But when we're talking about this, this whole incident happens right across from a nuclear waste dump. You have a major Homeland Security initiative trying to stop from dirty bombs happening. Seems to me this would be a perfect opportunity for somebody to go get a little extra uranium. It wasn't even guarded over there. It was pandemonium where you were, right?
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah, we had police officers and stuff from both Arkansas and Oklahoma there. Even Arkansas state troopers were over there.
Where did you sleep during those 3 days? You stayed there at the... do you have a cot or something?
No, I stayed there on... Well, they have a couch and stuff there in the... it was City Hall, basically. At Weber Falls, at the riverfront, that building, there's also City Hall, too. So they had a pool table there, couch, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And me and the two National Guard soldiers, we all stayed there together.
These National Guard soldiers were from where?
They were from Oklahoma.
Uh-huh. And were they enlisted men?
Yes.
Were they assigned there, or were they just
volunteered? No, they volunteered. They volunteered, just like I did. When I first got there, I volunteered. And then after I got frustrated and stuff, and I put on my uniform, and they showed up after that happened, though.
So you told the governor he couldn't have his press conference, and he went someplace and had it.
Yeah, he had it at the truck stop.
Then he left. That's kind of symptomatic of this whole situation. It seems to me like everybody was just looking for a photo op and then getting the hell out of there.
Basically, we even had, I think it was either a senator or the congressman for Oklahoma that even came there and stuff. And he shook my hand. He was saying, "I was doing a great job. Keep it up."
You don't remember who he is, huh? He just said, "You're doing a great job and keep it up."
No, I don't. I forget his name. I probably know it if I heard it.
When did you decide to leave? Why did you decide to leave?
Everything was done. The Corps of Engineers and stuff, Coast Guard, got the last vehicle out of the water. I went to Tulsa with the Highway Patrol. So I took...
you rode up there in the car?
I rode up there with them in their car to the State Medical Examiner's Office with the medical records and dental records for Captain Andrew Clements, because the body's been recovered, and they had to do identification purposes so that I can contact
the Pentagon. So did you call the Pentagon back?
I contacted the Pentagon, said the body's been recovered and identified. They, in turn...
I kept hearing a story about a laptop. You know nothing about that laptop?
No, there was no laptop that was recovered.
I wonder how that got in the news, you know, the mysterious laptop. For its conspiracy shows, that was a great deal, and nothing to it, huh?
See, that's just like... when I got sentenced and stuff, there was a letter there from Captain Andrew's wife, Clement's wife, talking about they had a little safe, that they had a safe that was in the van that her husband was driving, and it had coins in there, and it had different stuff. And that the vehicle was flattened. I'm saying literally flattened. And... Like I said, the only...
You didn't get the gold coins?
I didn't get nothing. Only thing that... Only
you think
thing,
some fishermen might have got them?
No. Personally, I think probably the one the highway patrolman or someone did when the vehicles were recovered.
Mm-hmm.
Because the safe wouldn't float on top of the water. It would sink. And they brought when the vehicles were actually brought up on shore, there was state troopers and stuff that actually was going through all the vehicles.
No one at the Pentagon said, how about the valuables? Just his wife did, though.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now I got to ask you, what's the story about you going over to Van Buren and renting a motel? Yeah, what's the deal on that? If the story I heard is you put the little do not disturb signs on 10 empty rooms and you went to sleep.
No. What happened was I stopped at the motel. This was after everything was over with. And I got me a motel room for the night. And turned around and I was like, would y'all have any...
Did you use your Army identity to get the motel room?
No, I paid cash.
You paid money for it?
Yes, I paid money for it, which when I got arrested and stuff and I went to court, it even shows on my discovery that my attorney had gotten. It showed my receipt where I paid for my room.
So they didn't charge you for anything there? There was nothing to charge you?
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. What happened was that I had asked them, because this was a couple of days after the bridge collapse actually happened. And I went over there and stuff because of the fact that the Home Depot there actually donated some generators and lights for us. So I went there and to pick up that, and I brought them back. So I stayed at the motel, and I asked them if they had any rooms because we had the Coast Guard there now, Corps of Engineers, the NTSB, and all the motels in that area was booked, was solid, because of the fact that all these emergency personnel and stuff were getting rooms. And they said, yeah, we have probably about 9-10 rooms left. I said, well, great. I'll give them your number and stuff. I'll tell them that you have rooms. That way they can call you guys. And they said, great. So...
Did you give the number to anybody?
Yeah, or? I gave the number and stuff to the NTSB agent and also to the the Corps of Engineers colonel and also to a lieutenant commander with the Coast Guard. And later on, after that, when I got arrested, they said that I had got 10 rooms. Didn't pay for any of them.
Now, you know, during the time, William, I was following you as best we could. We knew nothing about you, really, too much.
Right.
You know, I even called your uncle and somebody you hadn't seen for a long time, but it's all on the website. There's a matter of record. But it sounds pretty suspicious. You go over to this motel, and the next thing you know, you got a truck, and I want to get into this in a minute, the truck. I want to hear the real story on this. Next thing I know, you're in Canada. It sounds to me like, when we do these conspiracy shows, it sounds like, you know, you were doing some dirty work there for somebody, maybe for Uncle Sam. How'd this truck thing come about? You went over to what, Truman Baker Dodge or something like that?
Yes. What happened was I went over there. And
now, that's on the way up to your grandma's house.
Exactly.
So that's on the highway.
Exactly. I was having problems with my Mustang. And I had told him that I just got done at the bridge site and everything. I even showed him the video clips I had of it, and which I had showed you, which I had given you the tape.
Yeah.
And they turned around, they gave me a loaner truck.
Because the Mustang had trouble?
Right.
Okay.
So
you didn't steal a truck, they
no,
gave
I didn't,
it to
I didn't
you.
Steal a truck, I had it as a loaner. They even gave me the paperwork on it showing it's a loaner truck. And they said I could use it for 30 days. And stuff. So
they said you could have the truck for 30 days?
Exactly.
Was that on the paperwork?
Yeah, it was actually on the paperwork.
Okay.
And
why did you end up in Canada?
Well, I turned around and I went up there and stuff because...
You've been up there before.
Yeah, I've been to Canada before. I've been to Canada...
I mean, you've been to this place, this island, before, right?
No.
Oh, you hadn't?
No. No, turn around and I actually seen a thing in a magazine for camping and fishing and stuff like that. And I was like, heck, I could use me a few days there. So, after what I've been through and stuff, and the bodies I've seen and stuff at the riverfront, I needed a little...
Yeah, you needed a vacation.
Exactly.
It came up rather nefarious sounding that you had a weapon.
Well, yeah,
What's the deal on that?
It was a lever action 30-30 rifle.
And you use it to deer hunt or something?
Well, what it was the ranch I was at here.
Why did you have it?
The ranch that I was at visiting here in Oklahoma had a lot of rattlesnakes.
Okay.
So
where was that?
Wetumpka,
Wawiko, someplace like that?
I forgot the name of it. I had met him.
So it wasn't your gun?
Oh, it was my gun. I purchased it here in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
And
do you have to have a record or a certificate or something for that sort of
stuff?
Yeah,
I bought it at a pawn shop. Mm-hmm. The guy asked me for my identification and stuff. And he said, just sign the paper. So I signed it.
Okay.
And he called it in, got the authorization. And I got the gun, and that was it, the rifle. When I got arrested in Canada, the rifle...
Now you went over to this island, and what you have to take a ferry over there, and you put your truck on the...
Right, I put my truck on the ferry. Went across, come back to get some supplies the next day.
You had a cabin or something over there or what?
No. It was a little campsite, that's all.
Okay.
Sleep under the stars. And
are you a hunter?
I've done hunting one time.
Okay.
And so I stayed at a motel that night. And the next morning I was going to take the ferry back across. And
what's the name of this town? Do you remember?
I forgot the name of it. I was going to South Bay Mouth, Ontario.
Okay.
Which is the island. And so I was in line to go to get on the ferry. And next thing you know, I get surrounded by the RCMP and the OPP, the Ontario Provincial Police.
Do they wear red coats?
No.
Okay. Did that not like Sergeant Preston?
No, it's not like Sergeant Preston or Dougie Do-Right.
Okay.
And they had all their weapons drawn on me and stuff. And at first I asked them what was going on and stuff. They said that I had a stolen vehicle. I said, no, it's not. Here's the paperwork for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said no. They said it was a matter of national security.
Oh, and, really?
Right. And they said that the FBI had me red flagged. So they arrested me.
Did you realize at this point that they were talking about you being an imposter and
no.
all of this?
No.
No. Okay.
Once I got taken to the jail, they said that. That the FBI had me red flagged for questioning with regards to the I-40 bridge collapse. That was the only thing it was for, questioning. I stayed there for 10 days because in Canada it's against the law to have a firearm there, period, unless you're law enforcement or military in their country.
Did you know that before you went up there?
No. And I actually had it right there when I went through the checkpoint through the border. And the agent there at the border even saw the rifle, and they didn't say nothing about it. So I stayed there in the jail for 10 days. I got taken to...
What kind of jail is it in Canada? Is it better or worse than the U.S.?
In all realities,
yeah.
Better.
Better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
you were in jail in North Dakota once. Something. And I'm not bringing up previous records to make you look bad. But here again, you got to look at it from my standpoint. We're talking about a guy who calls Putin or the embassy and reports him. You're next to a nuclear waste dump and you take charge. You're up in Canada. It's a matter of national security. They pick you up. You know what's happening in the Dakotas, don't you? That's where our nuclear weapons are stored, a lot of them. But you're just saying all this is happenstance. Let's get back to the real story here. They brought you back to Muskogee?
Yes. Well, actually, I brought myself back.
Oh, really?
I drove myself back from
Oklahoma
City.
They told you just to turn yourself in here or what?
Well, after I was arrested in Oklahoma City, the judge released my own.
Well, no, I'm talking about from Canada.
No, they flew me back from Canada.
Yeah, okay.
They took me from Canada. They drove me from Canada to the Vancouver-Canada border and turned me over to the FBI there. And the FBI took me into New York to the federal building and stuff. I seen the judge there. I waived extradition. I was in the county jail there for like 3 days. And then the U.S. Marshals picked me up on Con Air.
Yeah. So anyway, they basically brought you back to face prison, which they sentenced you ultimately because you had a plea bargain.
Well, I didn't plea bargain.
Well, you pleaded guilty.
Well, I pleaded guilty
because on the advice of your attorney, or
on the advice of my attorney. Well, I knew I was guilty because of the fact that I knew what I did was wrong. But the reason why I did it was to try and save lives because nobody else was trying to do anything.
Nobody gave you any sympathy on that?
No. When I got sentenced, because I'd given an interview to a newspaper, and they took away my acceptance responsibility. See, in the federal system, when you go, they have a point system, your levels. And if you accept responsibility, they reduce your levels by 2 or 3 levels. All depends on how high your level is. So with my acceptance responsibility, I would have only gotten 33 to 41 months. In between.
You're talking about sentence guidelines,
right,
basically.
Exactly, sentencing guidelines.
Now, Judge Jim Payne here sent you for more than that.
Gave me 70 months.
But why?
He said that I didn't accept responsibility because of my reluctance with the news media trying to justify my actions, which I wasn't trying to justify them. I was just explaining to them why I did what I did. I accept the responsibility. I pled guilty. All right. I didn't have the federal government ask me, making me any deal. I pled open to the judge.
And they're still threatening to send you back to jail now.
Yes, I have.
You may end up going back in front of Judge Payne.
Well, I will have to go back in front of Judge Payne.
We'll ponder that in a moment. We'll be back to wrap this up. Don't go away. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're talking with William J. Clark.
Let me talk to you about UFOTV.com for a minute. UFOTV offers not only the best selection in the world when it comes to conspiracy and UFO subjects. We're talking DVDs, magazines, books, video on demand, and movie downloads. All available worldwide exclusively at UFOTV.com. The largest selection of exotic and suppressed DVDs, books, and magazines on the Internet. Go to the website UFOTV.com and sign up for the free color catalog or call this toll-free number, 1-800-350-4639. Stay tuned. Now, later in the show, we will be telling you more about UFOTV. It's the way to shop for quality UFO and conspiracy products in the 21st century. Get your free catalog now at UFOTV.com or 1-800-350-4639.
We've pretty well followed what I wanted to talk about, William Clark. You sure you're not an agent?
I'm positive about that.
I had to give up on that premise once they have sentenced you to some hard time. That's not much of a reward, would it be?
No.
It's almost, you pretty well are here testifying in front of me and the worldwide audience that idea of putting the Army uniform on was yours. Nobody taught you into that.
Yeah, I admit that. Nobody talked me into it. I did it because...
Nobody suggested it?
No.
Okay.
There was one guy that was with the Emergency Management Services says that he wished that somebody was here that would step up and take charge because nobody else wanted to. And I got frustrated. Nobody was doing anything, and that's when I put on that uniform. I said,
and you had no idea this nuclear dump was near there?
No.
Anybody ever mention that to you in the 3 days this stuff was going on?
Actually, no, they didn't.
You would think that'd be one of the first, that's the first thing I thought of that morning at 8:35 when I found out about it.
Well, one
was,
thing...
I wish I could get down. In fact, I told our producer, Roberta Scott, that morning. I said, maybe we need to get in the car and go down and see if anybody's over there at the nuclear waste dump. They may be loading barrels up right now. It'd be a good time to do it.
I wouldn't doubt it, because I know...
It was totally disorganized, is what you're telling me.
See,
it was pandemonium.
See, the United States government... I'm going to let you know a little secret about the United States government.
Okay, I like this.
Okay.
I'm for secrets.
The United States military has all these different forms. They have these identification cards and stuff, which are manufactured very easily. A two-year-old could do it. You got all these terrorists, Bin Laden and all of them, that can get onto any military base within the United States around the world and walk off that base with ammunition, weapons, explosives, the whole nine yards. Because of the fact that the government ain't running it like they should be running it.
You're saying nobody's doing their job. And
exactly.
And we still haven't figured it out.
I was actually, let's put it this way, a friend of mine at Fort Carson, Colorado, actually got me a military identification card. All right, issued it to me. Even put me in the computer. So that I could have it where I can go into the base store, to the base PX and stuff, and I can buy food, my cigarettes, that
well, that's
tax-free.
If a real terrorist that wanted to do us in, they could have done it a long time ago. It wouldn't take much to just get a hold of a gasoline truck and drive it into a nuclear power plant or a refinery.
Yeah, that's true. Nuclear power plants have automatic weapons, which they could stop the truck before it got there. But it's not that. But in all reality, if a terrorist wanted to do anything, it wouldn't be that hard to do it. All it'd take is a law rocket.
What do you hope to accomplish here, besides giving your side of the story? You want to wake people up that people aren't doing their jobs, or what's the problem here at the federal government? In the state government, we're talking about the Oklahoma Highway Patrol didn't do their job. We're talking about a lot of people didn't do their job.
Exactly. See, all these agencies, they feel that they're above everybody. Me, I'm only a little peon. All right. Sure, I know a lot about the world. I know a lot about criminal activity. Sure, I'm not a choir boy. Okay, I've had my run-ins with the law, with police and everything else. But the only way that
you're not predisposed to be a crook at this point. You're working hard. You
exactly,
got a job.
Exactly. I got me a job.
Okay.
I got me a place to live. And stuff, and I'm doing good.
Okay.
And I was doing good up until the bridge collapse,
which was none of your doing.
And the only reason that I even got caught over this was because of the fact that the governor wanted to thank all the emergency workers and stuff and have this memorial banquet dinner. And he contacted the feds to get in touch with the military.
They wanted to get Captain Clark back.
They wanted to have me and these National Guardsmen and stuff and all these other people show up. So when the feds contacted the military records St. Louis up, they said, we're sorry, but there is no such person as a Captain William J. Clark.
There's one of two scenarios. Either everybody was had and they're just trying to get even with you, or the other scenario is somebody's trying to cover something up and you're a good fall guy.
Exactly.
I wonder which one it is.
I think it's the later.
Oh, really? You think you're a fall guy?
Personally, yeah. Because of the fact that, one, the judge and the prosecutor knew one of the victims of the bridge site. They should have never handled my case in the first place.
You know the problem I have, William, is not with you. It's with how did the Associated Press... No, you called the Russian embassy. You didn't tell them.
No, but it was made public record in court.
You think the reporters are that smart to check the? I think somebody tipped them off. I'm going to talk to the AP and find out.
One thing about your conspiracy theory, and this is why I'm thinking this, is because within the past 45 days, the Secret Service has contacted my family twice, asking them about me and my affiliations, if I'm a threat to the United States president or anything like that. They're asking all these different questions. And for them to get involved with something like that, there has to be a bigger picture than just my own little puny self.
It goes back to you hearing voices.
Yeah.
And I would like to call attention to
the program
the federal government uses on people like William Clark. I'm not saying that they did with you.
Maybe they did when I was stabbed in the head when I was about 6 years old.
Really? How did that happen?
Well, my sister actually got mad at me. And
a family quarrel that went bad.
In the pickup truck in Texas after I was kidnapped. Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Tonight, as we do the show, William J. Clark is back in jail. Judge James Payne revoked his parole, and sentenced him back to prison, to the federal system. I know Clark very well by now. We have been in acquaintance with him by letter, email, telephone calls, and personal visits for some time. It all started while he was still in prison in Victorville, California. Not only myself, but many of our producers have had personal contact with Clark. Clark seems to me to be anything but a dangerous person. It's kind of interesting, in many ways, this show did not turn out the way we thought it would. When we originally started trying to make overtures to Clark, we were pretty convinced that the participants in this episode concerning the I-40 bridge collapse back in 2002 next to a nuclear waste dump just a few miles across the river, there had to be some sort of connection. Then there was that Army captain, too, who mysteriously died in the plunge into the deep river. And Clark recovered the briefcase. There was some question about whether or not there was actually a laptop computer. As you heard Billy Clark say, there wasn't. We don't know. We have to take his word for it. The authorities never really have said. We have many questions, actually more questions than answers. Evidently, according to Clark and others, it was hours before many of the cars were recovered. Why did the National Guard, the Highway Department, the Governor's Office here in Oklahoma, nationally, the Homeland Security people, and the Defense Department, even the Pentagon, allow a man who had no military record at all to take charge? Clark did not look like a Special Forces Army captain to me, nor did he look like that to many others. However, he was allowed to make decisions, get equipment, and generally run the entire recovery operation. He even at one time told Governor Keating where to have his photo op. Then there's the question of Clark going to Canada, and then the Mounties arresting him, and then him being brought back to Oklahoma, where they charged him, not with anything other than impersonating an Army officer. The record shows that no one died, no one was injured, no one stole any money, at least not from Clark. Clark's actions, nobody charged that at all. But here we have a U.S. district judge, a federal judge, and a U.S. attorney's office throwing the book at a man, keeping him from talking to whom? Long as he's in jail, he won't be able to tell his story. And when he was out on parole, they watched him like a hawk. Is the system so corrupt that individuals in charge are so inefficient that they all have to work together just to cover up their ineptness? Or was it more serious? Linda Jensen has a book about mind control and murder and the bridge collapse. Could there be something to that? And how did this Putin story get into the mix? And even more strange to me is, how is that a violation of his parole? Clark was actually trying to report a coup, someone trying to assassinate a head of state. And now, tonight, he's in jail. Why would James Payne, the judge, sentence him to 21 months to keep him out of our way so we can't ask him more questions? So what if Clark is just emotionally challenged? He has every right to be. When you examine his history, a mother who had many marriages, abusive stepfathers, a sister who actually stabbed him in the head when he was 6 years old. He was kidnapped somewhere along the way as well and held for ransom. And then he was arrested, put in a federal prison, and released without any money, and people daring him to make it. And when it began to appear that he might make it, he actually got a job as a cook. The judicial system went after him on this strange charge. So what do we have here? Is it a mind control operation? Did they pick Clark because he was a loser? Does it have something to do with the army captain and the missing papers? Or are they missing it all? How about that nuclear waste material? And Homeland Security always talking about dirty bombs. Doesn't seem like they've been doing a very good job of guarding that, do they? Either way, if it's a conspiracy or just a total tale of ineptness by many people, it's a story that leaves you soiled. I don't feel good about this story, and I don't know what to do about it. Thanks for listening. This is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.